This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy-Stevens,
and three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
Quickly becoming my favorite part of the show, and not because it's the start to the final hour and I look ahead to the drive home and maybe a couple Miller Lights or... Ever have a dirty Shirley, Ted?
I have not. I've not had a dirty Shirley. What's in it?
I don't know. I bought it in a can. It came like pre-concocted.
Okay.
It's a dirty Shirley Temple, basically. An alcohol version.
Who doesn't love
Shirley Temples? I love them. My kids go through those like they are candy. Everybody. They are so good. They make them at home.
Fair or foul, a 50-year-old getting a Shirley Temple.
Oh, that's fine.
Fair.
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Fair. I say fair. But it has to be like lunch. You can't be out with the fellas, you know what I mean, at a bar, and then you grab like a Shirley.
Yeah. Why are you judging him? Why can't he get a Shirley?
Huh. Okay.
I mean, you order a Sprite anyway, so you're halfway there.
Right.
Isn't it Sprite and grenadine or something?
It's ginger ale.
Ginger ale and grenadine.
Yeah.
With a cherry. Don't forget the cherry.
The cherry goes with it. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Got to get the good one. The maraschino.
Yeah.
But, so I had those last night instead of Miller Lights. I'm a sucker for a gimmick. Anytime I walk through the liquor store, if there's something that's like, ooh, what's that? I buy like the six-pack.
A dirty Shirley Temple wearing your Jalen Brown jersey. How about that?
And his Hey Dude. Don't forget the Hey Dudes.
Wearing your Hey Dudes.
Well, you know what's left tonight from the variety pack? Those were just dirty Shirleys. Tonight is left the extra dirty Shirley.
Oh, boy. Somebody's fighting on Twitter tonight.
It's got 12.9% alcohol.
Watch out.
Sounds like Mrs. Hart's going to be going to bed early.
More like I'll be passed out early on the couch because that's like four Miller Lights if I drink one of those things. But it is 5 o'clock. You're getting in your car. You're not having a dirty Shirley. You're having a regular Shirley before you go on your ride home. It's time for the 5 o'clock drive.
This is The Drive.
Swings and drives one. High and deep.
Top stories, stats, and quotes from around the sports world for your ride home. On WEEI Afternoons.
I'm going to assume this top text is in response to the question I just asked Ted. Have you ever had a dirty Shirley? I did once, and I had to see the doctor.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. I thought you might take it in that direction as well. In your early playing days or something, that might go down that road. But it is 5 o'clock.
It wasn't Shirley.
Shirley, you can't be serious.
It was dirty Cindy.
Shirley, you can't be.
All right.
Close. Starts with an S.
Why don't you go ahead and play the music again and we'll start the hour over.
So, tough loss for the Red Sox last night. They load the bases three times, three consecutive innings, including the first time when they had the bases loaded with no outs and then subsequently struck out one, two, three times in a row to a guy who has been on three different franchises, four different teams this year, has been cut by everybody and made you look silly, and then marched off the mound at Fenway Park, your house, with some weird crossed arms celebration, hooting and hollering. Ted Johnson, how do you feel about a Red Sox loss that included a one-run loss, an extra inning loss? Oh, and we'll get to it in a minute, some base running controversy. How's that feel?
Yeah, that was a gut punch. That was kind of just the teams felt like it just hasn't been playing that good lately. Only winning, you know, two out of the last nine games, and then so they haven't been good. The hitting's been down. Like I said, I mentioned earlier, the team as a whole hitting at .228 in the last 10 games, and we know what the relief pitching is looked like. So it hasn't been good, and to lose that game with opportunities like they had is, a lot of the stuff that was plaguing this team in the first 2 months when they couldn't get out of their .500 hole is rearing their heads. I mean, the bullpen falling apart, not being able to drive runners in when you have guys on base. That to me, what an awesome day, raising all this money, and you think the stadium is just electric. And they've had 16 consecutive sellouts right now. But they were even mentioned on the broadcast that a little bit of the buzz has kind of wavered recently. And you have all this chance to maybe kind of get everybody back on track. And that's what you do. You strike out three times when there's a guy right there 90 feet from home base.
I hadn't even thought about that, Fitzy. Ted brings up, so we had the Jimmy Fund telethon. They're announcing on the massive screen in center field, new record at the time. I think it was like 5.3 million. It was still chugging along.
Good vibes everywhere.
Then you even had the new guy. scrap heap guy, Nathaniel Lowe, hits a bomb, ties the ball game. Mm-hmm. Chapman's up. Like, everything is coming together. And then Fitzy, they decide that Nick Eaton's on third. And, well, let's hear Alex Cora's description of why Nick Eaton didn't tag up, as everybody, including our own Will Fleming, thought he was going to.
On that play, there was Eaton at third.
That doesn't impact our arm in center field. We prepare before the series, and we decide who we're going to challenge or not. So we didn't challenge him.
Is there any Eaton's call to stop, or is Hudson telling him?
We prepare before the series, and that's an impact arm, and we decided not to challenge him.
Spicy.
Oh, my. I missed it the first time. I was giving them credit for they made the decision at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Excuse me.
Before
they
the series.
They made the decision before the series that if we got into that situation, we weren't going to challenge an impact arm. Hate it. Hate it.
Why? Keep going. Yeah.
Because games have feels and flows and situations. And I said to Fitzy, you earlier, in that situation, we're at Fenway. Nathaniel Lowe hit a home run. The lights were flashing. There's some buzz in the air. And that's a difficult play to make. Even if the guy is in, I don't care, the 95th percentile for whatever the hell Dan Ball told me he was in the 95th percentile for.
He was.
Yep. You have a fast runner on third base. Make him make a play. Make him make a throw. Make him make a good throw and a good catch, and don't block the plate, and don't do anything that could end up being the game-tying run. And they decided 2 days earlier that they weren't going to do that? I could not hate that anymore, Fitzy.
That's the what's so frustrating about it is that it takes away that thing that we love so much about Alex Cora, Andy, which is the whole realizing what's at stake in the moment, managing with your gut, getting a feel for what's at stake. And the advanced analytics taking over, like that just gives us all of those like nerds are running FSG, nerds are ruining the game, Brezbot type of approach, as opposed to like you have Alex Cora on the bench for a reason. Alex Cora makes those in-game decisions. You know what? I got to go against the numbers right now. You want to know why? Because my team needs a run. We need a big play right here. We have to tie this game up because we just screwed the pooch. 1, 2, 3 innings in a row with the bases loaded. I hate it.
I also hate, Ted, that it takes out the, you've said this earlier in the year, situational baseball.
Yeah.
So if your guy Bregman was on third,
yep,
and he's still nursing the quad and not at his full speed, okay, maybe that's a different conversation. You have the fastest guy on your team, one of the fastest players in baseball on third. Yep. Doesn't that play into the equation?
Should. It should. And it, you know what? It should. It you know, these – I was just looking. It just hit me. There's a lot around this, that one issue. Just, you know, Nate Eaton on third, it's, you know, basically a 265-foot fly ball in the center field. Does he tag up or not? There's a lot that is goes into that. But let me just – you know, I look at these analysts. Got to justify their job somehow. Like, there's – they employ the Red Sox. I just did a really quick little Google search. I don't know if this is true exactly, but you know, it's probably not too far off. 33 analysts they employ.
That sounds low.
I feel like there's a lot more.
Yeah.
Okay. How many coaches do they employ? 13. So, like, there's three times as many analysts than there are coaches employed by the Red Sox. And again, I think 33 is low.
It does sound low.
And they gotta justify their. So they gotta be. You gotta pay these guys to come up. Now that there's no trade deadlines, what do? They come up with like things like this. Okay, the guy's got a strong arm going into into the series. And so no matter what the situation is, don't ever challenge him. Are you kidding? You know how many guys he's thrown out from center field this year?
Six.
One.
Oh.
He has thrown out one guy.
And we saw why. Did you see the throw?
Yes. Who cares how strong the arm is if he can't hit home plate?
He threw it to his manager practically. It was headed straight for the dugout. Wow, that makes me even more angry that he's thrown out one guy. But he's an impact arm, according to their scouting report and their pre-series meetings. Now, there is the theory, and Dan Ball sort of voiced this earlier, that maybe that's not true. Maybe they're covering for Kyle Hudson, the third base coach.
Well, I think he were a little
Eaton.
Bit.
Well, he definitely... Cora got defensive on the follow-up. The follow-up there, he got defensive. And whenever somebody repeats themselves like that and basically says, we're not talking about this, this answer I just gave you is the only answer you get.
Did you get the sense that he was throwing the analytics people under the bus?
No.
I didn't either.
No.
Because he answered it so quick.
I'm throwing the analytics people under the bus. I think you are.
And I am, too. Well,
yeah. But I don't think he was.
I don't think Cora was.
No.
I think he was covering for Kyle Hudson.
I also just think you're the manager. Even if that's true, that the pre-series meeting scouting report overrule them in the situation.
Yeah.
There's a reason you're paid $7
million. You've left 13
a year.
Guys on base. Like, what makes you think, even if it's Alex Bregman coming up, that he's going to get the guy in?
to be fair, you were only 0 for 12 at that point.
Over 12.
The 13th would come, and that's how the game ends. Correct. And you lose because you gave up the opportunity.
That game sucks so bad. Oh, my God.
Worst loss of the year.
When these teams make decisions before the game even starts, what they're going to do in any situation is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Basketball does it. Yeah. Baseball does it.
It's the analytics, though.
Football does it.
It's the analytics. It was the Rays basically losing a World Series because it said don't pitch Blake Snell and you can fill in the third time through the order, blah, blah. Like, whoa, we're making decisions before we even see what's going on in the situation because this little number on this little screen. I think it's the worst thing that's happened to sports.
I tend to agree. Do you think Alex Cora minds it?
Yes, absolutely.
I'm not so sure.
Really?
Because it takes the pressure off of Alex Cora. Hey, you know what? They're upstairs. They called it. You know what? There's no pressure on the manager to make any in-game decisions ever because it's all predetermined. It's the easiest job ever. Well, all you got to do is what they tell you to do.
I would argue it just moves the pressure to a different time. Instead of the pressure coming in the game, it's answering for the stupid thing you did in the game post-game. And you have to get defensive.
I'll make $7 million to do that.
And maybe that's what he's doing. That wasn't the only issue. There were a lot of issues. As we said, 0 for 13 with runners in scoring position. But there was also the issue of Walker Buehler, who didn't exactly have his best stuff, and he was asked about it post-game.
Walks being, the key for you right now.
Yeah, it's embarrassing, man. I think the last time I walked this many in a season, I threw 207 innings. So, it just sucks.
Walker Buehler went 4-plus innings, gave up 4 hits, 4 walks, and in case you didn't hear it there, he said it's effing embarrassing. That's a very good bleep.
Yeah, it's embarrassing, man.
Yeah, it makes it sound like he just says embarrassing. No. Yeah. He dropped an F-bomb there. This is the Walker Buehler that's been questioning his own existence for 2.5 months now, the same time
just
period.
Six poor guy. Here in Red Sox or just on the planet?
In baseball. No, everything. He's in a bad place.
Well, you know what? I'm guessing he called Chris Sale and said, hey, how do you handle it when you suck at pitching here?
Right. Just take him head on.
Just tell him how bad you suck. Mm-hmm. And you know what? It is endearing, but there is a point in which, okay, this is the 9th straight game that he has not gone more than 5 innings.
Yeah.
9 straight games.
It's weird. The bullpen gets taxed when you have a starter who's not helping the guy out. I did use this sort of as our jumping off point poll for the day because last night's game had a bunch of reasons for concern, which area you think is kind of reason for the loss. So at Jumbo Heart, at WEEI Afternoons, I said, what aspect of the Red Sox concerns you most in the current struggles? I said timely hitting.
That's what I voted on.
Starting pitching depth or non-Chapman bullpen? Those were the three options I gave Fitzy. Ted just told you he voted for timely hitting. What would you vote for, Fitzy?
Considering that a single hit last night could have flipped the entire script and table, I'm going to go with the same.
Yeah, that's winning, and I do think a little bit of his recency bias. The most annoying part of last night's game was the inability to get a hit when you needed a hit. So that has 47% of the vote.
I was gonna go like 51, 52, so almost a majority.
But you also have a strong 42% voting for the non-Chapman bullpen.
Yeah, if you asked over the weekend, that would have been winning hand right now.
Those people like missed last night's game and were thinking back to the weekend, and that's why they're doing their voting. And then only 11% would say it's effing embarrassing, the pitching depth that they're putting out there. Starting pitching depth, not as big a concern as I thought it might be. Those guys have been inconsistent at best, but certainly in the light of what has gone on most recently, the bullpen and the lineup.
I hope these games aren't just don't, because, now they're bringing up Brandon Bernardino. Now they're bringing up Richard Fitz.
Yep.
It's like, okay, you couldn't have brought him up a little bit sooner than this because, every game matters now.
Every
game matters now.
Did you guys see that Toley, in his second start, went 5 innings, gave up a couple hits, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts, 99 on the gun regularly?
Yeah, 99. Can't hit 100. Hey, what a wuss.
You need some. God, they're going to need something, man. They like bring him up.
Oh, we're going to see him. Actually, let's jump ahead. I had a little rundown here, but let's jump ahead. We asked Craig Breslow about that yesterday, and I think his answer is enlightening. I definitely think they're going to put something on Peyton Toley's big old broad shoulders sooner rather than later.
But I keep hearing
good things about how Kyle Harrison is pitching, and people keep telling me, like, you're going to want to see this Tolley kid come up and join the Sox because he's something else. Anything you could shed or as far as those guys go?
Yeah, you know I mentioned guys that we have in the upper levels of the minor leagues, and I think depth, particularly on the pitching side, that maybe we haven't had in a couple of years, and you know, if needed, feel like they'd be able to step in and give our team a boost. Exactly what that timing looks like and what the roles that they might be stepping into, I think, is to be determined. But tonight we've got Walker starting, and you know, the last one wasn't as clean as the one before, and he was great in San Diego. He was great against Philadelphia, and in those playoff environments, we've seen him at his best. So you know, we're looking forward to what he's going to bring tonight.
Do you do that? Do you look back to the trade deadline and say what coulda, shoulda, even if it's in the shower, or, I don't know, regret after the game, the ride home?
Okay.
There you go.
Jeez, just grill. Stop button.
Do you just sit there and look at yourself in the mirror and just hate yourself for things you didn't do at the trade deadline?
Yeah, no, we'll get into that a little bit. I mean, just it's an honest question.
Hey,
I
also, Breslow, you're at a crossroads in your career.
That actually
would have been. You consider yourself the Cole Strange awesome. Of the front office?
That would have been awesome.
Hey, Breslow, you're at the crossroads.
Is this potential postseason run the crossroads of your career? That would have been tremendous. I don't think that would have gotten laughs, but
he didn't. He never answered Fitzy's question, of course.
Not really. No, just, I mean, I feel like
he tiptoed around the whole thing. I thought I
never answered it
without being super direct and just being like, when am I going to see Harrison and Tolley, damn it?
Yeah, I was going to say, Stiz, I asked you to play the actual Craig Breslow, not the Brezbot version that you concocted in your little laboratory back there, because there were a lot of words there that didn't really
fulfill
the requirements of an answer. Patriots. We do need to talk a little Patriots here in the drive. I know you wanted to hear this, Ted. Your boy, Phil Perry. I wouldn't say he's totally on board with the year two jump for Drake May based on what he's seen in recent weeks.
Some of his best practices this year were those two practices in Minnesota, in my opinion. You know, is he progressing? Is he regressing? He's still in his early 20s, about to be 23 years old. It's really difficult to say anything in terms of this is like a linear progression. It's going to be dips and dives, and there are going to be peaks and valleys, Kayla. And I think today was actually, you know, he's kind of getting back on the upswing after a couple of down days.
So the word regression is not good. And I think he's using it compared to like a previous week, from week to week regression, not a year one to year two regression, just to clarify there. I don't want to speak for him, but I think that's kind of the implication he was giving. But are there more and more people starting to worry a little bit more about Drake May?
I think so.
Yeah.
Warranted? I think so. Yeah. And Phil and I are both kind of on the same page with him. Phil's been out there every single day. I haven't been, clearly, but we both just thought he's oodles of talent, unbelievable ability, but you felt like, man, in OTAs and training camp, you would see a signs that he's going to have a big second. Most guys improve from their first year to their second year. The most they improve of all their years in their career is usually between years one and two. And they're not seeing it, and it's making them nervous, right? Rightfully so.
Yep, and Fitzy, we thought we were seeing it early on because if you remember, the big story was OTAs. Oh, my God, he threw four interceptions. And then early in training camp, it was no interceptions. And so that was
Bring
like,
it up.
Right.
Oh, nice, that's linear. That's development. Yep. That's going in the right direction. Yep. And then we got to in-stadium practice turnover. We got to game practice, game turnover. And now it feels like Phil's R word, the regression there, it's apt right now.
But he still hasn't, like, this is why people need to, like, ratchet down their expectations for Drake May this year.
Why?
He still hasn't completed a full season. He played 11 games last year. He has so much more to learn. Ted, I think he's got a head full of McDaniels every day, every night, and I think it's going to take him weeks to become comfortable with an offensive line that maybe has three starters settled just less than 3 weeks away from kickoff, a wide receiver room where you've got Steph Diggs and you don't even know who your 2 through 5 at this point is. There are so many different issues that are unsettled. I think it's going to take, this is why my whole party line has been, I don't think you're going to have a real idea what Drake May is going to be all about in his second season until you get to the middle of October. It's going to take him so long to like settle down and settle in to what's around him and what's being taught to him.
I just feel like we would see more signs. That's all. I think it's fair to ask or to expect people to want to have seen more at this point. I'm not saying You know, he's got to be what Jaden Daniels was last year. I'm just saying, I want to see definite improvement from what we saw last year. And I've seen some, I've heard some, but I haven't heard enough to get me excited that when October comes, we're going to be seeing a totally different player.
All right, you just got a little taste of it, but up next we are going to play a little bit more Craig Breslow. We had the opportunity to talk to him. I didn't think I asked him if his career was at a crossroads, but maybe you'll look at the question I asked a little bit differently. Craig Breslow joined us yesterday at the Jimmy Fund Telethon. We'll hear a couple of the more interesting questions and answers up next here on WEEI Afternoons. But for the final time today, here's Dan Ball with What's Trending.